February 8th, 2017, Masoret. All right, so in Parshas B'Shalach, we read about the Exodus. What takes place when the Jews leave Egypt? Now, essentially, I mean, it begins by telling us that it wasn't God's plan. It was not God's plan to take the Jews on the direct route to Canaan. That was not the plan. Because, I mean, the way I understand it, the concern was that they might encounter, that's what the pasuk says, the best way to go would have been, and that's the first thing that B'Shalach is telling us. God did not lead them on the way or the road to the Plishtim. I guess that would have been the straight way to go. If the goal was to get to Canaan, then that would have been the way to go. Would have been the shortest route. Kikarovu. So Rashi says, "V'noach loshuv biyoso haderech leMitzrayim." That it would have been easy to return to Egypt. So, I mean, it would seem that the a tremendous problem or a tremendous issue, a concern, let's put it that way, was that the Jews would want to return to Egypt. That itself has to strike us as strange. That's not the sense that we have. Although, that has to be adjusted to the actuality. The sense would be that these people, why would they ever want to go back to Egypt? Yet that is a problem.
And when they say it every time. They say it at least three times.
Yeah, I mean, many times. As soon as they encounter problems. It's very, very, that's really, it's an interesting idea in its own right. That idea itself. People, I mean, we can learn something from it. People, when they embark on something, they embark on a journey, on a path, they make a decision that, this is what we have to do. This is where we have to go. So let's assume that they've thought it over carefully and logically. And it's not just an impulsive thing. But to a large extent, whether or not they stick with it depends. In other words, they sort of depart from the ideal of the plan, and now they want to see. If things go well and go smoothly, that sort of reinforces that they're doing the right thing. The problem with that is, but if they encounter obstacles, then they go off that path. Which doesn't make any sense, because I mean, obviously, if you have certain experiences which indicate that you've made the wrong decision, that's a different story. I mean, you have to keep your mind open. We don't have such absolute knowledge, so sometimes you do have certain experiences which confirm your concerns and your fears that you did make the wrong decision. I'm not talking about that, because what happened to the Jews in the wilderness, if they should encounter difficulties, that wouldn't reflect on the intrinsic decision, which was that in Mitzrayim you can't have any real future, you can't have any real fulfillment. You can't fulfill your objective as to be a holy nation, to receive the Torah. And all the plans that God has for you cannot be fulfilled in Mitzrayim. It's not just that we don't want to be slaves. That's not the reason. The reason that God intervened was not simply because it's not a good thing to be a slave. and you're better off being... That's not the case. And that could have been the emotion, that could have been the fear. In other words, there were those people that essentially left with the Jews because they wanted to get out of that situation of being slaves. But see, if that's your motivation, and you imagine that it's going to be better for you, you know, in Canaan or whatever it is, then you're very, very, very vulnerable. Because you're constantly asking yourself, am I better off here? Maybe I'd be better off there. You're constantly making that type of a evaluation. So, on the other hand, if the reason for leaving is because you have this ideal that you want to pursue, and it cannot be achieved in Egypt, but you have to, that's the goal. The goal is to go to Canaan and receive the Torah and build up a certain society. So then these hardships along the way won't deter you. I mean, it may bother you. I mean, we're human. But it's not going to lead to that conclusion that we should go back. So, I mean, and now we should ask a question. In other words, when we read this pasuk, generally, we don't stop and ask a question. That's the very first pasuk. Vayhi b'shalach Paro es ha'am, and it was when Paro sent out the nation. V'lo nocham elokim derech eretz plishtim. God did not lead them by the road, the route of the Pelishtim. Kikar avu. Now, kikar avu, the way Rashi is translating kikar avu, well, there's different commentaries on that. Because the word ki can be translated as because. In other words, that the key, because, is coming to explain why God. That's how Rashi's learning. Okay. We'll stick with that for the time being, but you can see that there's a lot of commentary on that. But it's fine. It makes sense. In other words, why didn't? Because then the question is, why didn't? You would assume that God would choose the route which was closest. And the reason is something which is completely unanticipated. Kiyomar. Then you have to cover all the kin, pen yinochem ha'am, berosem ha'chama, v'shavu mitzrayma. That's a strange kind of reason. Why? Why would the people return? Why would they have a change of heart and return to Egypt when they encountered a war or whatever else, whatever other difficulties? They would encounter. Actually, the Sforno learns a little bit differently over here. Let me check. Hold on a second. So Rashi says, "Kagon milchemes vayered hamaleki vaknani," like the war where the war of Amalek, came out after them. In other words, that it's already anticipating that there are nations that would come out to do war with them. I don't know why. We don't know why Amalek decided to attack them. I mean, they weren't in the game. They weren't like one of the nations. And, you know, all nations have good relations, have bad relations, and clashes. None of that applied at this point in time. They were in the stages of becoming a nation. Nevertheless, that's what Rashi says. So Rashi says, therefore, imholchu derech yashar, if they were traveling on a straight path, hayu chozrim, they would have returned. Then he says, uma im kishe kifam derech mukam, and it's like a kal v'chomer. And if, when he actually did, you know, cause them to go in a roundabout way, amru nitna rosh, still they said, when they were, you know, in moments of stress, they said, let us appoint the head to take a v'nashuva Mitzrayim and return to Mitzrayim. So if they had that attitude, even when they were going on a difficult path, a crooked path, so to speak, in the sense that it wasn't straight. Amru, they say, so he says, in Malicham Pshuta, had God taken them on a straight road, Alachas Kama Vakama. How much more so? Okay. Now, you have the Ramban, you have the Sforno. Let me just take a look at the Sforno. Yeah, because he mentioned something else. Because I was just thinking about this. That, how could that have been the plan to take them by the way of the Plishtim if the plan was to give them the Torah on Har Sinai? So that automatically meant that they couldn't, that was somewhere, we have no idea where it is. It's somewhere in the wilderness, but it's not on the Derech Eretz Plishtim. So let's take a look at this far now. So he says, God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines. So he says, even though the divine intention was to lead Israel to Mount Sinai to receive the Torah, and from there to Eretz Israel, and as it says, V'lakachti eschem li'lam, I have taken you unto me as a nation, ve'vesi eschem al aretz, and I'll bring you to the land. So I guess he means that I will take you to me for a people, that's Har Sinai. Nonetheless, the present intention was to lead them to the Sea of Reeds, although it was not the way to either of these, i.e. Mount Sinai or the land of Israel. The purpose was to drown Paro and his army there. Okay, similar to in Shoftim, where it says, U'mashachti elecha el nachal kishon es Sisro, and I will draw out to you to the Nahal Kishon Sisro. Okay, so this far as I'm saying, this similar idea over here. Then he says, now the straightest and shortest route to Egypt, to the Sea of Reeds, was by the way of the land of the Philistines. But God, the Blessed One, did not want to lead them on that way. All right, so he's learning a little bit differently then. Because you have to deal with that question. You cannot say that the intention was to take them directly to Canaan. The intention was first to take them to Sinai and give them the Torah, and from there to take them to Canaan. Actually, I mean, it would seem that it wasn't that simple. It would seem that the plan was to take them to Sinai and not to immediately go from Sinai to Canaan. That wasn't the plan. Because we see that they spent, you know, a number of months, almost a year, camped around the Sinai. That is, the next phase was the building of the Mishkan. Working on the assumption that there are those who maintain that originally there was, like the Sforno himself actually maintains, that originally the plan was not to build the Mishkan. And the Mishkan only came into play as a necessity because of the Chet HaEgel. But that's not the way the Ramban learns and others learn. So if you learn, that's why the Sforno, we're doing the Sforno now, and the Sforno could be saying that the plan was merely to take them, first to give them the Torah. That was essential. Because without the Torah, there's no Am, there's no nation. So therefore, there was, so to speak, there would be one stop along the way. And that would be to Sinai, to receive the Torah. And then from there, they would go straight to Canaan. Of course, that never happened, as we know. According to that plan, well, it was 7 weeks until they received the Torah. I assume that was, you know, that's the way it was planned. They needed that amount of time to get ready to receive the Torah. That's 7 weeks. Then they receive the Torah. Then they travel, assuming they travel on the straightest path, it's only a matter of days until they arrive in the land of Canaan. So it wouldn't have been that long from the time they left Egypt until the time they invaded the land of Canaan. So what's it talking about then when it says that the God did not lead them on the Derech Eretz Plishtim? That's what he has to answer. Because obviously God didn't, since he wasn't taking them straight to Canaan, he was taking them to Sinai. So he's saying that what it's referring to is, well, I mean, before they went to Sinai, there was another objective. I guess we should organize these things. The first objective after they left was the destruction of the Egyptian army. That was the first objective. So God was going to arrange things to draw them. That's why he makes the comparison to the Sisera. That God's first intention was to mislead the Egyptians and give them the impulse to chase after the Jews so that Hashem would be glorified through the destruction of the Egyptian army. That was the first objective. Okay. So that meant that already determined where they had to go. They had to go to the Yamsuf, which he calls the Sea of Reeds. That has nothing to do with going on a straight path, not a straight path. They had to go to the Yamsuf. Now, from the Yamsuf, they then had to go to Har Sinai. And from Har Sinai, they would go straight to Canaan. Of course, we all know that it didn't work out that way. But that was due to the sin of the spies. You know, that changed everything and determined that they would be in the wilderness for 40 years. But we're talking before that comes into being. This is the plan. So at this stage of the game, there is no problem of the spies. Now, so the question then is, what's it referring to when it says that God did not lead them on a straight path? Lead them to where? What are we talking about? So this Sforno says that it's referring to the trip to the Yamsuf. He says, now the straightest and shortest route from Egypt to the Sea of Reeds, that's the Yamsuf, was by the way of the land of the Plishtim. But God, the Blessed One, did not want to lead them on that way. Kikar of whom? Because it was near. And since that road was near to Egypt, many travelers frequented it, coming and going from and to Egypt. Okay. What does that have to do with anything? So he's continuing now. Hence, when they see war, when they, the Israelites, will hear from these travelers the news of Pharaoh's preparations to pursue them together with his army, they will, without a doubt, due to their fear of war, regret and return to Egypt. Therefore, he led them about by a way where no other man traveled. Wow, that's amazing. Clearly, there's a machlokas already between Rashi and the Sforno. And my general understanding was that along that was a dangerous path. Well, the path itself wasn't necessarily dangerous, but it was dangerous because it made the return to Egypt very easy. So God did not want to put them in a position where they could easily return to Egypt. Of course, then the question arises, why would they want to return? So, according to Rashi, they might encounter war. Actually, they did encounter war, the war with Amalek. So the war with Amalek, had they been in a position where they could have easily returned, so then they would have decided to return. But since they were in a position where they couldn't easily return, so then they didn't have that option. But the Sforno learned it totally differently. glance, the pshat of the Sforno seems to contradict the psukim, which indicate that at least at first, when Moshe told them to go back, to turn and go back towards the Amsuf, which would be in the path of danger, getting closer to Egypt, because their emotions would be they want to get further away from Paro. So that seems to be a positive thing and a sign that at least at that point they had courage and they weren't afraid. Of course, we know what happened when once they looked up and they saw the Egyptians chasing after them, so then they had a complete meltdown. But the Sforno is learning that a very interesting shot, that had they been on the main road, then they would have encountered travelers that were going up and back. And it seems, at first glance, it seems a little far-fetched. That's what I'm saying, it seems. And then they would have had people telling them that the Egyptians are planning to chase after them. And that being the case, they would have immediately turned around and gone back. That's his pshat. So let's continue with the Sforno a little bit. So Hashem took them in a place where nobody traveled. It was completely uncharted terrain. Derech Hamidbar Yamsuf, by the way of the wilderness, by the Yamsuf, says the Sforno, so they would travel by way of the wilderness, since no informers from Egypt would come on that road. Hence, they will not be aware of Paro's pursuit of them until he overtakes them. As it says, and the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, by which time they no longer could make amends by returning for Paro and his army would not accept them. Wow. Interesting shot. So that apparently he's learning when Moshe told him to go back, go towards the Yam Suf, according to the Sforno, that didn't require any special courage because they had no idea. They assumed that Paro was finished. According to this, which makes a lot of sense, it says that it mentions the point that as the Jews left and the Egyptians were burying their dead. So there's some juxtaposition. So, and it says, and the Jews went out with a Yod Rama, with a high hand. So that would indicate that a certain sense of triumph, a certain sense of confidence. And all around them, they saw devastation. That's very significant. Because as they're leaving, they're seeing for themselves what God wrought upon the Egyptians. And they were all burying their dead. And that's another important factor, you know, that whole issue why they were commanded not to leave at night. They had to wait until the morning. And perhaps that's another factor. God wanted them to see that. That would be a very, very important lesson for them about the punishment that God will, after, of course, giving them all these opportunities to do tshuva, and they didn't do. So they faced a terrible calamity. But a byproduct of that, I imagine, would be a certain sense of confidence that they were doing the right thing by leaving. And you see something like that, you figure they're finished. No one's going to come back after that. That's a mistake that people and nations make throughout history. When their enemies suffer a tremendous defeat, it does lead to that sense that they're finished. They'll never pose a threat again. And that was the mentality of Israel after the Six-Day War. That was a very serious defect and problem, which led to the mistakes. That led to the Yom Kippur War. That sense of absolute confidence that the Arabs would never attack us again. And here, you see something I think is similar, that learning according to the Sforno. See, Rashi's learning differently. That Sforno is learning that if they were to hear the news by being on the main road, they'd find out that the Egyptians are chasing after them, they would have given up immediately. That's the way he's learning. So he's learning that God led them in a roundabout way, so they would have no idea. And thus, when they made that, you know, they decided to follow Moshe and to go in the direction which would bring them closer to Egypt, that didn't require any special courage, because they didn't imagine that the Egyptians, after what they had been through, are going to come chasing after them. And but his theory is confirmed by their reaction. In other words, according to the Sforno, the first inkling they had that the Egyptians were planning to come after them was when they looked up and they saw the whole army charging after them. And then by that time, it was too late. That is, if they heard that Paro was planning, so they could have sent a delegation to negotiate. It's one thing before the attack has begun. But once the attack has begun, it's too late. That's how the Sforno learns. And then it mentions in this context. See, in this very context, Vayasev Elokim Asam Derech Hamidbar Yamsuf, and God caused the people, turned the people towards the way of the wilderness. Then it mentions V'chamushim Olu Bnei Yisrael Me'aretz Mitzrayim, that they went up armed. That means to say that they had weapons. That seems to be coming out of nowhere. What's it doing over here? Why mention it? And nothing about being, you know, where'd they get the arms from? Where'd they come from? It doesn't mention anything in the, you know, the preparations for leaving. All right, mentions a lot about the gifts that the Egyptians gave them, the jewelry and the clothing and so forth, but doesn't mention a thing about the arms. So we don't understand, we don't know. I mean, it's not impossible, but what did they do? They went to the Egyptian armories? They took it from the Egyptians? They produced their own arms? We don't know. Weapons. So, but the question is, what does it have to do? Why is it being brought in over here? So, he says, and the children of Israel went up armed. All this had to be done, even though they were well armed. For with all their weapons, they lacked the courage to fight with the Egyptians and escape. For they were inexperienced in all this, i.e. warfare. Okay. That's interesting. So the Sforno is learning is that it mentions the factor of the weapons, because that too will show you their state of mind. The Pasuk is focusing in on the fact that their state of mind was one in which they would not be able to have the courage to fight the Egyptians. But it was God's plan to draw the Egyptians out and to destroy their army. And in order for that to happen, he had to lead them in a roundabout path. That's the whole, according to the Sforno, that's the whole point. To lead them in that path. It doesn't have to do with the determination of the path towards Canaan, according to the Sforno. But as we said, Rashi learns differently. But going back to the point that I made originally, that we can, you know, learn something from this, And that is that, I just wanted to finish up that point, that when a person makes a determination to embark on a certain journey towards a certain goal, so as we said, very often their decision is affected by how things are going. So when they bump into setbacks and hardships, you'll see a lot of people give up. And they take it to mean that it was the wrong thing to do. So, to a certain extent, you see that over here, that there was a general concern, because many of the Jews didn't leave for the right reasons. And that is, there's a certain calculation. We're living as slaves, we'll have a better life. And things will go easier for us. And so on and so forth. So if that's the case, then that person is vulnerable. Because once he starts to experience setbacks, it's just not worth it. He's working with that calculus. But if the person is going there to pursue a certain ideal, then he's not vulnerable to that extent. I mean, we're all human. But it doesn't matter that we had this setback or that setback. It doesn't have anything to do. It doesn't prove. I mean, the ideal we're pursuing is the correct ideal, and we'll keep pursuing it. You see this in many areas. I mean, where you could apply it. I mean, people that decide to lead an idealistic life, and they want to be in, let's say, in chinuch or teaching Torah and so forth. I'm not saying. I mean, there are practical issues there in terms of parnasa, but you'll see that very, very often, and many of them are going to experience difficulty, setbacks, and so on and so forth. It doesn't have to be just the parnasa. You know, you're dealing with people. There's going to be tremendous resistance. Yeah, it's a tough world, being a rabbi out there, and so on and so forth. The Jews are not easy, and you're going to suffer. I mean, I know a lot of, very, very good rabbis, I'm sure you all do, or even teachers, rabbeim, that were treated very, very harshly. Because you're dealing with a lot of irrational people. So, at a certain point, some people decide, that's it. It's not worth it. But then there are people that put up with that because their eyes are fixed on the goal and they believe that it's something of tremendous value and they're willing to put up with the so-called setbacks. Okay. What I wanted to do, though, and we discussed this over the years, and I wanted to kind of get back to it, was this whole issue as to, what's going on over here. That is, the Jews, Moshe and the Jews, when they went to Paro, and I've said this many times, there's a certain misunderstanding that the world has about the story. And that is that, that Moshe demanded that Paro free the slaves. Now, we know that that's not true. That he did not make such a demand. He never made such a demand. He merely said that God has called upon us. We have an obligation. Our God has called upon us, and he has commanded us to go and worship him in the wilderness, to go a distance of 3 days. Now, it's not said explicitly, but let's be honest. The implication was that they're going to come back. That is, let us go, and we'll serve God. Now, Moshe doesn't say this, but that seems to be the implication, that we'll come back to Mitzrayim and everything will resume. Now, and you see that that's clearly one of the issues that Paro is concerned about. As the blows get stronger in Parshas Bo with the Makos, and they're getting harder for Paro to take, and you see at certain points he acknowledges that he's wrong. He says he's the Rasha and Hashem is the Tzaddik, and that becomes a sticking point for him, though. Of course, he seems to be on the verge of agreeing, and in fact does agree, but then he always has an issue. Like, why are you taking the children? He's suspicious. Why are you taking the children? Leave the children behind. Now, the basis for that suspicion is that you're not going to come back. This is a guise that you're using. This clearly the basis of Paro's stubbornness. I mean, I'm sure he's stubborn. He doesn't want to give in altogether. But he needs some justification. And another basis, and he might have given in had this not been there, is that he wants to hold on to the slaves. He's got this tremendous supply of slave labor. So that's not something that a ruler, a tyrant, is about to just give up. So it seems that it reaches the point where Paro... See, the whole idea of not giving in is irrational, because any intelligent person, if a person, assuming you forget about the moral issue, if a person has a tremendous supply of slave labor, and so it makes sense to treat them rather decently, doesn't it? Well, why do you don't want to destroy your own slaves, your own people? So by giving them an opportunity, to the contrary, giving them some of these benefits, you can practice. We'll build you a nice shul, and we'll do so. They're less likely to rebel. Any intelligent person. So all right. So they need their God called upon them. So they have to go and work. So let them do it. And then to the contrary, you'll be a hero, and they'll feel a sense of gratitude to you. That all presupposes that they're coming back. But it does emerge that like when Paro is on the verge of giving in, so he always comes up with something, and that seems to be related to this. Like, why leave the children behind? Why do you take the children? So, all right, Moshe has to justify it. We could go into that. What exactly was Moshe's justification? Because Paro's argument doesn't seem crazy. That is, what do you need the kids for? The kids don't participate in worship. All right, so we can go back, make a note of that. We can go back and we'll see what Moshe's answer was. Binureinu v'zkeinenu nelech. That we're going to go with our youth and with our elders. I mean, what kind of a logic is that? At first glance, at least, the Paro does seem to have some logic over here. And if there is no reason to bring the children, so why are you bringing them? Oh, because you don't... This is basically just an escape. That's a significant part of the debate. There is a debate going on between Moshe and Paro. It's not just a power play. Paro is coming up with good points. And in that debate, Moshe is not saying outright, we're going to come back. But Moshe merely states that that's his demand. That's the goal. We want permission to travel a journey of 3 days to serve our God. But he's not mentioning that we're going to go to Canaan. He's not mentioning any of that. So therefore, I assume that that's the implication. So that's the question I want to deal with. That then the question is there an element of deceit? And the comment, that is to say, here we find that the Paro does send them out. That's after, Makas Bechoros. And then a few days go by, and Paro discovers, seemingly, that's a simple meaning of the story, that they're not coming back. So then he's enraged because, first of all, he doesn't want to lose his entire supply of slaves. He's not giving up on that, and Moshe deceived him. So then he's going to go out. We don't know what he's going to go. I don't know if it's, what the goal was. Well, by sending out this army to chase after them, was the goal to round them up and bring them back, or was the goal to just kill them out? It's not clear. So that's another thing we'll see if we can get any insight into. But the same is true, by the way. Then in another case, another Makkah, when Paro again is willing to let them go, but then the argument about the animals. And he says that you have to leave your animals behind. Or, well, not all, because we're going to have a chag. And we're going to, because you see, Paro did yield. That is, he yielded in the sense that in one of the Makos that he gave them permission to take the holiday and to serve God, but do so in the land of Egypt. So again, you see that same thing, that Paro is, there's two elements. There's the element of stubbornness, which is, who is God that I should listen to him? I don't know God, and I'm not going to send out the Jews. So first of all, he's the boss. They're my slaves, and I'm not giving them any time off to worship God. But that eventually, that gets broken down under the power of the Makos. And he does give permission. And he says, but go and serve God in the land. That is, find a place. It's, Egypt is a big land. Find a place. And, okay, take off the time. I'll give you the time off from work. But why do you have to leave the land? So again, you see that that's the fear. The fear is that this is a ruse. This is not, like you're saying, it's a religious thing and you have to serve God. This is not. Really, it's a ruse. You're trying to outsmart me. You're trying to find a way in which to extricate the slaves, take them out of here. And I don't know if he knows where they would go, but you just want to basically get freedom from the enslavement. So if it's true that you just want to worship Hashem, so do so in the land. So then Moshe comes back. And he says, that's impossible. We can't do that. Ki tov as Mitzrayim. Because that would be something that it's just not doable. Because we'd be slaughtering all of these animals, and that's their deity. So we can't do that. It's very interesting. It's very interesting. That was Moshe's argument, that we have to do so outside of Egypt because the Egyptians wouldn't put up with this. Although, we do see that on the 10th of Nisan, when they prepared the, that's why it's Shabbos HaGadol, the Great Shabbos, because that took place on Shabbos. And they set aside the sheep, and then they slaughtered the sheep. You don't see that reaction. That's why it's a great miracle that the Egyptians were powerless to stop them. But it could be that was further down the line. And at the time when Paro made the offer, the attitude of the Egyptians had not yet changed to that extent. All right, so Moshe has a valid... There we could see Moshe's defense. He has a valid defense. Okay, and then you have... But when it comes to... So he's established that. You see, the argument goes through steps. And Moshe has established the point that they have to leave the land. Paro is not arguing that anymore. But then he has two further qualifications. And one is, we'll leave the children behind. One is, the first one, I believe, is to leave the animals behind. And there, too, and there Moshe has his comeback is, we have to take all the animals with us. Because we don't know. We don't know how many to take. So Paro apparently is saying that, okay, be reasonable. You're going to go, you're going to take the animals, that he understands. Because that's the holiday is the sacrifice. But make a decision, how many? Be reasonable. So Moshe says, you know, we don't know. We can't do that. We have to take all our animals. Actually, right, Chait gave a very good shot over there. Of course, what kind of an answer is that? I mean, Paro's point seems to be stronger. Why don't you know? Well, why can't you estimate? Why do you have to take all your animals? At first glance, Paro's position seems to be a more reasonable one. Well, why can't you make an estimate? Take some extra ones, whatever, but you know, to say that you have to take every single hoof, lo tishar parsa, that seems at first glance that the argument of Moshe doesn't seem to be, what's the reason behind that? So I should explain. He said that, it's a very good point. I mean, because, see, in Paro's framework, where they serve these various deities, they believe in these various deities, that these, you know, that there were different supernatural deities that had powers and control. So that was a different kind of thing. It was essentially, it's based upon man's projections, and you're trying to appease these deities. So it's rooted in man's projections. So then you can use your calculations as to what would be a good present, what would be a generous gift, so to speak. But I was just saying that myself. I'm just using that as my intro to the point that Rabbi Chait made. He's saying that Moshe was telling him that it's totally presumptuous of us. Our God is unknowable. We have no right to make any kind of judgments with regard to God's will and how to serve God, which is it's a very significant point, especially Bizman Hazeh, you know, when a lot of these, conservative reform, their idea of serving God is doing those things that make sense to them and incorporating it into the religion. The idea that we have to subordinate ourselves to the will of God, which is above and beyond anything we can understand, that they simply reject. But that's the cornerstone. So he's saying that how could that would mean to say that we would have to sit down and we'd make a calculation, but that would all be based upon our reasoning, our assumption of what God should want or shouldn't want. That's absurd. We can't do that. We then have to bring everything we have and be prepared for whatever God will say. Maybe God will say to sacrifice every hoof. So that was the argument of Moshe, which makes a lot of sense. So that's a significant point. Anyways, we do see, I want to hone in on that point, that it would appear that Paro and the Egyptians were under the impression that the Jews were only asking for permission to worship God, but that they would be returning. And yet, here we find that the Jews didn't do that. They had no intention to return. Thus, the question, did the Jews deceive them? Gnevas das, so to speak. Did the Jews employ deception? Now, I mean, we could take up the question. Okay, you could say, well, yeah, they did, but they had no right to enslave them. We can go through that. But I want to explore that, for starters, more fully. Because I think that there's a very interesting idea behind that. And it's going to take up the question of why. Because if you're going to say that they use deception, it's not a satisfying. Why did they have to use deception? They had all the power. God could do anything. When God brought down the plague of Makas Pachoros, that was the end of the game. So why couldn't Moshe demand complete freedom for the Jews? Why couch it? What was the concept behind the idea of framing your demand as something which was rather minimal? And all the fighting up and back is over that minimal demand, which, because of that, it would seem anyways, caused the Jews ultimately to have to be deceptive, to use deception. That is, once they left, they had no intention of coming back. That's what I want to take up. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow.